It's like this gigantic portion of noodles, 5 hard-boiled eggs, 5 chicken drumsticks, and they are just, it's ASMR. You're hearing like, and it's just a 1-minute video of somebody. I got to pull one up and share my screen. This will be funny to actually do.
This is The Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody.
Pardon it.
Here's your host, Greg Cody.
All right, I have to start.
What the hell was that, Greg?
What happened?
I just saw you creepily move your mouth to say something, but I heard nothing except for maybe a whisper. That was very weird.
Was it you clicking the got it thing? It was like when you were clicking, it looked like that you were clicking the thing that, like, once it says he's recording, you have to click it. You, like, made this weird, like, you mouthed words. Like,
okay. After last week's disastrous appearance from Key West, I was worried I was having problems yet again. It came up on the Levitard show last week. Christopher was making fun of me because when I broadcast his high school games, I played a song called Algebra.
Yeah.
And I did. And I hadn't thought of that song in many, many years, to the point where I had forgotten at the time that it was by a group called Soul Hooligan.
Right.
Okay. I'm a serial listener. Okay. When a song is in my mind, I listen to it 30 times in a week. It's insane. And there's a different song every week. Last week, it was All the Way from Memphis by Martha Hoople. I don't know why, but I listened to that song. Just so many, a big Ian Hunter fan, love him. Quintessential rock and roll voice. But, and so once Algebra was mentioned, I'm in my garage listening to Algebra on repeat for hours. I just can't help it. And I'm curious if anybody in the audience does that, where if you get a song in your mind, you just play it nonstop for days until it wears out, and then you come up with a new song to serial listen. Do either of you guys do that?
Well, the audience can't respond to you, so Yeti and I will take a crack at it.
Right, but I think that I have the audience thinking now, and they're going, no, he's a real idiot. Nobody does that.
Now, it's one of these things where I'm turning into you, Dad, and I like get annoyed with myself when I become more and more like you, and this is one of the things that you've given me this... I don't know if it's like a negative thing or a positive thing, but I also will beat the crap out of a song and listen to it dozens of times in a row. And that doesn't happen it's not every week where I have a song.
Right.
But I will stumble upon songs and discover songs and just listen to them 5 times in a row on the way to work before moving on to something else.
Give me an example. Give me a recent example of a song in that category.
Oh, man. What is a recent example? I'd have to look at my phone.
Pebble Drive by Yeti Blunk, which you can buy at yetiblunk.com.
Honestly, not currently Yeti, but when it first came out, I did have a streak where I was listening. Yes.
Yeah.
I've done that with Pebble Drive, honestly.
Okay.
I'll do it. I can't tell you the last one that it happened to. I know I've done it with a couple Talking Heads songs when I was first really diving into them. I remember that. I can't remember the last time I really... did it when it wasn't for research. Like if I'm working on a parody song, of course I'm going to listen to, or a lot of times if I'm trying to get a certain feel for something that I want to write, I'll plow through it over and over. But as far as just catching me up in emotion and like, I'm going to play this nonstop. It's been a minute, but yeah, it'll happen once or twice a year. Easy.
Taylor Swift, Antihero. When it first came out, I did it.
Really?
Oh yeah. It's a banger.
Wow. Okay. That I would not have guessed that. Is liking Taylor Swift a guilty pleasure? Do you have to say that or no?
I'm not ashamed of my music. Like, you know, I have a wide range of musical tastes, and I like pop hits. I like Taylor Swift.
Hits.
I like that attitude.
Yep.
And I also admire Taylor Swift. I think she's great. We had a disastrous, chaotic episode last week, I thought, because, you know, I was in Key West and the internet was bad and blah, blah, blah. But Kate Fagan was on and she was great.
Yeah,
I thought she was just terrific. And she made a fleeting reference to a chef named Kristen Kish, who had cooked her a 40th birthday meal. We'd never heard of Kristen Kish, but I have since. And man, she is legit. Kristen Kish has a new show out called Restaurants at the End of the World. It sounds like an Anthony Bourdain vibe, where she's going like places that nobody's ever been and finding great restaurants. And it sounds terrific. And it debuts on Tuesday, this Tuesday, on National Geographic TV, and starts streaming the next day, Wednesday, on Disney Plus. So that's exciting. I'm happy that that Kate Fagan knows a chef who's blowing up like that.
You're excited about that, huh?
I am. And I'm also excited for the TV show. I'm going to watch it.
There's a lot of people out there doing content around, hey, videotape me while I eat and I'm going to be interesting.
Really?
And it's honestly, there's so much of that right now in today's TV viewing and internet videos. And to your point, if she's getting this show, she must be genuinely interesting, because there's so many people in this space trying to like make content out of, hey, I'm going to eat this thing. And the fact that she's getting that big time show means she must be not only a good chef, but interesting.
That was one of my first observations about Instagram, was that everybody's taking pictures of food, plates of food, I do think food is very photogenic.
Everybody's reviewing stuff, like Portnoy does the pizza, there's ice cream reviewers, like every genre of food has somebody out there who goes viral testing.
Yeah.
I go around and I test ice creams, I test pizzas, I test burgers. It's the latest thing it's kind of like podcasting. You know how like podcasting emerged? And everybody had a podcast all of a sudden. Right. Like videotaping yourself eating food is very in right now.
Yeah.
Food's universal. So, I mean, I understand why that would be a market to go after, because you know, everybody eats for the most part.
They do. That's a good point, Yeti.
Some of us more than others. But yeah, I mean, and it's a way that you can learn, you can explore the world through it. There's so many different cultures that have so many different, even with the same ingredients. There's so many different takes on the same ingredients. And so, yeah, I understand that you think something as everyday and mundane as eating, or something that can be as mundane as eating, you know, wouldn't necessarily jump off the charts, but it's got universal appeal. Food can be funny. Like those are the funniest Weird Al songs are all revolving around food.
Eat it.
And so there is a pretty broad spectrum that you can cover.
Have you seen the mukbang videos, Yeti? They're like this. They're on my algorithm sometimes on social. It's like ASMR of eating. They're usually Asian people, and it's like they have a bunch of noodles, a bunch of hard-boiled eggs, and it's like in a minute video, they eat an insane amount of food. It's like this gigantic portion of noodles, 5 hard-boiled eggs, 5 chicken drumsticks, and they are just, it's ASMR. You're hearing like...
Oh God!
And it's just,
I don't want to hear people eat.
Just a one minute video of somebody. I got to pull one up and share my screen. This will be funny to actually do.
Oh man, I'm not big on hearing other people eat.
Go on about your business while I try to find one of these videos.
Well, I want to mention one other thing. One of the reasons I love the Kate interview on our show last week is that I found it thought provoking, particularly when she was talking about barnstorming teams, women's basketball teams in the 1930s and 40s, I think she said, decades before the WNBA. And my mother, my late mother was born, I think, in 1920. So she would have been a girl, a young woman, while all this was happening. And I wondered, geez, I wonder if she had ever heard about that, or if that interested her, or it ever was on her radar at all. Because back then, you know, there's no internet, there's not even any TV. How would you even hear about something like that? But I never had that conversation with her, so I never knew. And I want to tell people something, and I'm being serious here. Find the oldest person you know and have a conversation with them about your life, and you won't be sorry that you did. And the greatest assignment I ever got in high school was interview the oldest person you know. It was for an English class, I think. And I interviewed my mother's father, Pop Doogie, and it turns out, you know, as a child, he had worked in a textile mill in Lawrence, Massachusetts. And later he turns up, as a matter of record, my grandfather is in the congressional record testifying in Washington for what would become the child labor law enacted in 1938. Never knew that before having that conversation, which was a school assignment. And there's just so, you know, there are still people living, although a dwindling number, who fought in World War II, who lived through the Great Depression, who did all this stuff before anybody was noticing. You know, now we all live our lives in public, you know, because of social media, because of podcasts, there's no secrets. We're all out there. But everything was a secret generations ago. You know, people lived secret lives, really quiet lives, and there's so much to know. So I'm going to suggest to you that you find the oldest person you know. Maybe it's your grandfather. Maybe it's the old neighbor you're afraid to talk to because he seems creepy, but he's probably a real nice guy. Talk to somebody who's really old and just have a chat about their life.
Dad, Yeti and I do this every week.
Okay. Okay. that's a good line. I trust I am not the oldest person you know. But
what I don't recommend is doing a weekly podcast with the oldest person you know.
That's good.
Greg, I also find it very funny that you're like, how would people know back then about these barnstorming events or these college or these basketball games? Greg, you've worked at the paper for 375 years.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Newspaper, buddy.
That's correct. But that assumes that my mother, in her mid-20s, was subscribing to the Lawrence Eagle Tribune, which I think is a bit of a reach, or that the Lawrence Eagle Tribune was writing about a barnstorming team in Iowa. I'm just saying there's probably a chance that she had heard about that, but maybe a good chance she hadn't. And the regret is that looking back, there's probably so much about the younger selves that were my parents that I just never knew. You know, I rarely asked my father about being in the Army during the war. You know, the Purple Heart he won, my brother and I talk about after the fact. I think I only talked to him about it with him once fleetingly. But anyway, I just think there's a lot to learn from really old people. Maybe I'm prejudiced because I am becoming one. But
no, it's interesting stuff. Did any of them keep journals?
No.
Okay. I was going to say that's one good resource.
Yeah.
My dad didn't journal a lot, but he has some, especially from his earlier years.
Yeah.
And it's interesting now, a lot of our journals could be, you know, what we share on social media, really,
or right.
These podcasts. But Chris, did you know that Wild Bill Cody worked on the railroad all the live long day or in his younger years?
I did not, actually.
Yeah. So that's something I'm doing, you know, audience. One day we will do some genealogy segments or something because I'm helping Greg slowly but surely. I'm helping do some genealogy work. And it's so if you go on some of these sites like Ancestry.com and things like that, you can learn a lot, even if someone didn't keep a journal. You can learn where they were living at certain times of their life. You can see if different people were living in their house through census records. And like I said, I found like an old census record of Wild Bill that said his occupation was railroad worker.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can still learn a lot, but if you're able to get your hands on a journal or anything, if they were ever in the newspaper for anything, you can just, even the smallest snippet of information, you can fill in with a lot of their story, which is kind of cool.
I feel like it's a cheat code. And with really old people, you just put they were a railroad worker and it just fits. You're like, all right, I buy it.
Yeah, like, they could be total liars.
I mean, like somebody today, like, are there still railroad workers today? Like, why is it hard for me to say railroad?
Of course there are.
Chris, we have railroads. There have to be railroad workers.
Well, when's the last time you met somebody at a restaurant and they're just like, yeah, I'm a railroad worker? Like, I don't know.
Are railroads a figment of our imagination? Is that what you're saying? Are they all a construct of the simulation?
They're called engineers. That's what they're called. They don't call themselves railroad workers.
Well, the people actually building and the ties, whatever those things are called, the big chunks of wood, those are railroad workers. And you're right, that is a tongue twister, railroad workers. They're not the engineers.
Dad, you're lucky, by the way, that I'm having some Zoom issues and I can't share my screen because I have a good video here I want to show you guys and I can't do it. I could send it to Yeti, actually.
Okay. I want to move into the present tense, Christopher, and talk about you and Billy broadcasting the Marlins spring game. Because I never got a chance to hear anything about it, but apparently Billy said something that will just delight me that I want to hear all about.
Well, like it didn't come natural, Dad. You sent me a text during the game, not saying, hey, I'm listening to you, good to support you. I believe you didn't hear a second of it, correct?
No, I didn't.
Thanks for the support. But the one thing you did during it was, hey, try to mention the Greg Cody show if you can. Just kidding, .. not really. So, you know,
that good was text by me.
That was that made me feel good in the middle of the game. But I did show Billy. It was literally in the middle of an inning. I got that text while Kyle Seeloff was doing like a play by play. I show Billy it.
Right.
Just because it's funny. Like quietly, I show him the text and he smiles. And less than 2 minutes after that, Billy like ham-handedly just works in like, yeah, Kyle, you ever heard of the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody? You should go on it sometime. And like as ham-handed as possible, the way you'd love it. Just
excellent. Thank you, Billy. I tell you, Billy is great. He really is.
Oh, this is great right here.
What am I looking at here? Right, oh, Dad, my God.
This is mukbang. Watch how fast. All right. So right now we're looking at a ridiculously large size portion of noodles. Couple look like chicken wings, chicken bones, and like 10 hard-boiled eggs. Hit play on this video. Let's see how long it takes him to eat this. Look at deep breath. And boom. Boom. This is an amount of pasta my dad consumes in a year right here.
Oh. That's ridiculous the way he's eating that. He is shoveling it into his mouth.
I can't do this.
Look at this.
I don't like this at all.
In 10 seconds, he just ate that much pasta. Now he's going to move on to everything else. That entire plate is going to be cleared.
What is he, a professional speed eater? Who is this person?
I'm telling you, this is the latest trend. Look, he's wiping his mouth. He cares about cleanliness.
Nope, I can't do it.
No.
No, I don't like this at all.
Yet he stopped it. Wow. Okay, but do you get the point? This is the latest trend. I'm telling you, you can find hundreds of these videos on the internet. The ASMR is really, I think, what people are into with this stuff. But I'm telling you, and it's all over my algorithm. I scroll by that type of video like every 6 videos.
Yeah, I find that disgusting, quite frankly. And I'm an eater. I'm a voracious eater.
No, you're not, Dad. You're not an eater, Dad. You're not.
I love eating. You put me in front of a pizza or chicken wings, and I'm eating with the best of them.
Dad, if I put a plate of spaghetti in front of you and Gracelyn, Gracelyn eats more spaghetti than you do.
I don't eat much pasta. You're right. I don't. Pasta fills me up like nothing else on earth. It really does.
And yet you still have a gut.
That's Mr. Beer doing that to me. So tell me,
Mr. Beer,
tell me more about the game broadcast. How's the experience of doing that?
Well, you know, it's a slight cheat code because they do it through the prism of these guys are from the Lebatard Show. Right. This is going to be a different broadcast today. So like Billy and I do our thing. We're not sitting there having to be serious baseball analysts. Like we're kind of doing our shtick, you know, asking Kyle about random things that have like nothing to do with baseball, and then like in the middle of him talking we'll be like, and the pitch, you know what I mean? Like we're having fun. It's a spring training game. I don't think they'd let us do it for a regular season game. I don't think there's a ton of people watching, but it definitely felt better this time. As you know, you do things more, you get more comfortable,
right?
I enjoy it. Like, you know, I don't know how much a true baseball fan tuning into the game enjoys it. I know that our listeners that tune in tend to say, hey, loved you guys on there. So I think our show listeners get it, but it's fun for us. You know, I don't know, like I said, I don't know how much, you know, Jason Latimer of the Marlins loves it, but he doesn't seem to hate it. He's the PR guy, by the way.
Yeah, he would pretend that he loved it, right?
No, Jason, Billy, and I have a great relationship. I know the Lebatard Show relationship isn't exactly great with the Marlins, but Billy and I have a great relationship with Jason. Love Jason.
Yeah. And I love Jason. I think he's a good guy.
He is. And
even though he hates what I write, I like him.
And yes, overall it's a fun gig, man. It's like casual. I love baseball. So and I work in like I flex my, because that's of all the sports, if there's any sport I could be a legit analyst for, it is baseball. It's probably the sport I know the best. So I throw in my knowledge, like, you know, I me and Kyle get into some like X's and O's stuff. I ask questions and stuff. So I think I do bring a good baseball knowledge to the, but I'm still having fun. I'm still doing wacky stuff too.
Right. And this was in Jupiter, right?
Yeah.
So do you get the sense that there's any, you know, big shows of the fans of the show that have come there just to look at you and Billy and wave at you? Or
one guy before the game like shouted up, hey, Billy and Chris.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
it sounds like a plant. That sounds like a friend of yours who you pay to do that.
What event or thing have you gone to where you thought you would have seen maybe had good fan response that had actually maybe the least?
Oh, I mean, well, that's one of them. One. No, but I didn't like, we didn't really say, hey, come out to this. Like,
right.
Billy and I have done, I think we called it an occurrence one. Time we like just decided, hey, Billy, on a Sunday, we're going to go to a Marlins game. Let's tweet it out. Let's say we'll be at the Budweiser bar in the second inning and we'll just see. And like, it was a sad, like 3 or 4. We had some nice conversations. We ended up meeting some people and it was cool. But I think like 4 or 5 people showed up. So that was a little.
Was that on the Sandlot night?
Yes.
Yeah.
And since there was a small, like there was at one point 4 or 5 people standing around us, one kid came up to me and thought I was the catcher because he saw people gathering. So he's like, oh, people are gathering around this guy with red hair. It's Sandlot night. And Billy kind of looks like Squints. Like, Billy and I, like, kind of look like two of the Sandlot characters. So one kid asked me for a picture. And then, like, midway through the I took the picture. And then he's walking away. And I had this moment of, I think he thinks I'm the cat. So I had to tell him, like, hey, just so you don't go posting this, I'm from a podcast. Like, I'm not the catcher from the Sandlot. And he kind of, like, gave me a look like, he kind of acted like he knew it, but I think he was learning it right there.
Oh, wow. It's good. I'm glad you told him. Christopher, you announced on this show a few weeks ago that you have an interest in learning the craft of stand-up comedy, of actually venturing down there, which is a brave avenue to go. That's the most difficult thing in entertainment, I think, by far, to stand up alone on a stage and make people you don't know laugh.
Yeah.
You were at a comedy workshop recently.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about that experience.
It didn't go great. It was, you know, me and my friend Alex, we found a flyer for something that's like, hey, come, you know, on this Sunday from blank to blank and, you know, learn comedy. So we were like, hey, we're trying to do this. This will be fun. Let's do this. And, you know, they can't all be winners, I'd say, these workshops, seminars, things. So we showed up, and I don't want to call it sad, but it was a little sad. And it wasn't, you know, we stayed for an hour or so, wasn't as beneficial as we thought it might be. So we may have snuck out the back door after about an hour and a half because we realized
an Irish exit. They call
we that. Realized that we could have get as much out of this if we just went and go grabbed a beer and started writing comedy by ourselves. Like, it was really just like watching a couple of YouTube clips of like Eddie Murphy and then like this guy talking. It wasn't like, I don't know. We both, maybe we were jerks, but we didn't really enjoy it or feel like we were getting anything out of it. So we punted on it pretty quickly.
It might be one of those things that's difficult like that, though. Like, you're seeing the sausage made.
Yeah.
And it's a lot less glamorous than maybe you would have thought. I don't know. I'm not saying you went into it with like instant fame expectations by any means, but like you probably felt there'd probably be a lot more energy there, a lot more people.
Yeah.
But like at the local level, I think these things start off really, really small and you have to really let go of a lot of,
yeah,
whether it's ego or just get it, or it's may not even be an ego thing. It's just like your comfort zone. You really have to get, because you feel naked when you're in a room, when you're in a small room filled.
What's small? Why am I naked?
Why are you naked in a small room?
When you're
room?
In like a small room with only a couple of people there, like,
yeah,
you're really exposed and it takes a lot to be able to like it's easy to feel like the situation could be lame. And I'm not saying you have to get over that. There might be better avenues that very well, more productive workshops, but like, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of that on your path.
It's fair. And, you know, we could have probably stuck it out, but
you should have,
I mean, but you weren't there.
You half-assed it.
But I'm telling you,
I'm speaking like your father now.
I get what Yeti's saying right now. It makes perfect sense. But I think if Yeti was there with Alex and I, he would have like looked at us and been like, yeah, I don't think you're getting much out of this. Yeah. But like, I get what you're saying. And I'm not talking like, I want to do sad. Like my first 10 appearances doing open mics are going to be in front of like 10 people. I don't have this standard of like, I need to do it a full arena. It was more just this, like we kind of had the expectations. We Googled the person that was running it and we were like, oh, this guy's got legit comedy chops.
He does.
It was more just like a teacher that plays videos for the class. It wasn't like this guy really like getting into the like writing process and like what he does to write. Like we wanted to like really learn from somebody. And it was really just like, all right guys, welcome. Here's, you know, Eddie Murphy's a great comic. He uses this technique here. And it's just like, I've seen all these YouTube videos. I don't know. And you're right. I probably didn't have a good attitude. We probably could have, you know, just stuck it out.
It can be really uncomfortable. It's hard. Yeah. It can be very cringy and it's difficult to sit through. Like I went to a stupid Beatles cover show one time. And it actually had a good amount of people there. It wasn't a sad audience, but like it was in like the lobby of like a city hall or something like that. And it just felt weird that the room was just uncomfortable. It felt very weird. It didn't have the same energy as if we were at a club watching a show. And I left early for that.
But make no mistake, this is not me and Alex like punting on this. Like
right.
we went and wrote comedy after that. I have like a whole doc now. Like I have something I kind of feel like I could go up now and do. I mean, it's going to be terrible the first few times, but I have enough of what I call like a set that I like, you know, in the next few weeks, I'm going to get up somewhere. Like I'm going to just, so it's like, I don't want you to think that me leaving that seminar a little early is like quitting on doing comedy. Right, it was right. Just, we didn't like, after being there for a couple hours, there were still 2 hours left. It was far from our house. It was a Sunday. What, like, we were just like, let's just get out of here. Like I got it.
I also think that, and Christopher, correct me if you think I'm wrong. I think comedy is a form of entertainment where if there's an art in bombing, like you can make bombing funny.
Yeah.
If what you're saying is not going over, there is a way to spin that and win the audience back just by the fact that you're struggling so much. You know what I'm saying? I've seen comics do that.
Right.
Where like all making, you can be bombing in a quiet room and all it takes is one line that you say in reaction to how badly it's going.
Right. Yeah.
Everything
like
around.
You say a joke that bombs and then your reaction to the bombing makes them laugh. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And speaking of that, I want to say, get to some dad jokes real quick because we didn't do that last week and I missed them. I missed my dad jokes last week. So what did ducks have for lunch?
Quackers.
That's right. Soup yes. And quackers. Soup and quackers. Now that was number three for a reason. It was the weakest. Number two, what do you call a really old snowman?
Puddles.
You're very water wow. Was the answer, but puddles is just as good. I gotta turn up my dad joke game. Let me see if I do better with number one. Why was dad staring so intently at the orange juice container?
It was concentrated.
It said concentrate.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeti. I mean, this is
boom.
Wow.
Standing ovation for Yeti. I mean,
I don't know whether to be proud or just extremely disappointed in myself.
You should be disappointed in yourself.
I really am. This is, I gotta come up with better dad
jokes. Like, while Yeti got all three right, he like didn't get the exact phrase right on any of them, though.
That's true. Although I do think puddles is a better answer than water, quite frankly, because puddles sounds like a name, you know, like something you'd name a dog or a fish.
Puddles Pity Party. Why don't we go to break right here? And then like, we've got a bunch of stuff on the back end. Let's let's go to break right here and come back with Three Facts Jack and some other good stuff.
Good.
It was a way to throw it to break, Yeti. I
feel like we petered out there at the end, Yeti.
Big time. Peter Puddles.
Before we get to Three Facts Jack, let's talk about Sheets and Giggles. Guys, go to sheetsgiggles.com/Greg. Use the code SCOOPS, 20% off. And it's not just Sheets, guys. I know Sheets is in the title, but Yeti, they have a lot of stuff at Sheets and Giggles. What do we want to talk about today?
Look, we've told you about their sheets and their comforters already, but what about their pillows?
Yeah.
Chris.
Their pillows, you know how you have to, you know these pillows you have to flip like 7 times a night because they get too warm? Not Sheets and Giggles pillow. They even after 7 straight hours of sleeping, they always still have this like this coolness to it. It's soft. It's not too soft. It's not too firm. The Sheets and Giggles pillow is like all their products. It's the best company to promote for because you're being legit. Sometimes podcasts promote stuff and it's like, I've never even tried this product. It's not that good, but they're paying us, so we got to say it. This product is legitimately good, guys. The sheets are good. The comforter's good. The mattress is good. And the pillow's good. They got the full experience. Last week was sleep week. There's nothing better than good quality sleep, guys, for your mental health, for your family. Nothing like a gift of sheets or a pillow. I know it doesn't give off gift, but when they get it, you always get the text of, holy crap, these sheets are good. And it's a great feeling when you give a gift and you get that text of your gift was awesome.
So yeah, and these pillows too, they make you feel good on the outside and the inside. So first, they're adjustable. So like when Chris already talked about their cooling feature thanks to their eucalyptus lyocell material, but they're also adjustable. They come overstuffed. So if it's too firm when you first get it, take some of the stuffing out. They give you a little reusable bag. You can put the filling in until you get the perfect fit for you. But second, they're hypoallergenic, they're cruelty and chemical free, and they're made in the United States.
Sheetsgiggles.com/Greg, promo code SCOOPS. Come on, support us, support them, help us out, support your family, get better sleep. Go sheetsgiggles.com/Greg.
Right on. That reminds me, all this sleep talk and pillow talk. When my mom and I used to go to church when I was a boy, Every Sunday, we would ask my dad. My dad was not a churchgoer, and so it became a running joke in the family. I'd say, "Dad, you want to come to church with Mom and I?" And his stock answer was, "I'll be praying at St. Mattress." because he liked to sleep in on a Sunday. So that was my dad.
Let's get to three facts, Jack.
There are three things that interest him, so sit right back for three facts, Jack.
Number three, 1960s TV sitcoms were very prudish. For example, on the Dick Van Dyke Show, he and TV wife Mary Tyler Moore slept in separate beds and could not say the word pregnant. By 1972, the Mary Tyler Moore Show became the first sitcom which alluded to a single woman having sex and referring to, quote-unquote, the pill. So that's when everything changed.
Old shows, prudish but racist.
No. Okay.
I've seen like old clips of like old shows where it's just like you just talk, they talk differently back in those days.
Right. Yes, you're right. Number two, the common spice nutmeg in concentrated form is a hallucinogen with psychotropic properties. Nutmeg's inebriating effects were first noticed in the Middle Ages when crusaders would ingest large amounts to inspire prophetic visions.
That might be the least interesting thing I've ever heard.
It's true. Plus, I hate nutmeg. I am not a nutmeg fan.
How much do you have to take to get like to get high? That's
a good question. Right now, somebody is putting nutmeg in a pipe and lighting it.
They're probably going to have a really bad day.
Number one, mob leader Al Capone, arguably the most famous prisoner ever at Alcatraz, spent most of his time incarcerated writing songs and playing banjo in the prison band called the Rock Islanders. In 2017, his handwritten lyrics to a song titled Humoresque sold at auction for nearly $20,000. Never knew that about Al Capone.
I need to hear this music.
I was going
to
say, there's got to be clips of like the band playing together.
We should try to find it. And speaking of music, the Levitard Show actually made a song out of me saying, "And you know it," on the show last week. So we should try to find that and play that. I would enjoy hearing that.
And you know it.
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 You know it. And you know it.
And you know it.
You know it.
And you know it.
And you know it.
You know it.
It is a banger, though. It's John Reed, the video producer for Levitard. It's like it's really good.
It's only like 30 seconds, but it's fun. It made me grin like a mule eating briars. Have you all heard of Gary Rushington?
I'll never understand that phrase.
Really?
Yeah.
That's an Edwin Pope phrase. That's deep Georgia. Edwin used to say he's grinning like a mule eating briars. I don't know what a briar is. I think it's something that's most people wouldn't eat because thorns, right?
Yeah.
But yet mules ate briars, which who knew? I didn't know that. Briar's ice cream. has anyone heard of Gary Rossington?
No.
No.
Okay. Gary Rossington, RIP, just passed away a couple of weeks ago. He was the last surviving member of Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and he was the guitarist who's on their iconic song "Free Bird." That's his guitar lick. You mean like he's that's the sound and
he's the last original member, Chris.
Yeah, the last.
Wow. I got that. But like when I think of Lynyrd Skynyrd and a guitar like riff, I think of "Sweet Home Alabama."
Right. Yeah, that was
the slide guitar at the beginning of a "Free Bird," and then the just the wailing solo. You know, on the outro,
right?
Know, that's quite iconic. And people aren't yelling at concerts the cliche "Play Sweet Home Alabama."
Yeah, that's true.
They're playing yelling "Freebird."
Right. Oh yeah, and the reason I bring it up is that there are now no original members of Lynyrd Skynyrd alive, and yet the group Lynyrd Skynyrd is going to continue. And I wonder. I don't think that's necessarily a terrible thing, but I think it's worth wondering because if a group goes on without an original member, should it or should the group name die when there's nobody from the original iteration still alive? I wonder about that.
Do you think that there will be a Greg Cody show once the three of us have died? Will three people continue on with this show once we're
profitable it is?
Yeah, seriously. Short answer, no. But Lynyrd Skynyrd is not the name of a guy. I mean, actually, it is. Lynyrd Skynyrd was named after a high school teacher of theirs named Lynyrd Skynyrd. And Dad, they just changed the spelling.
Do you ever think about the day? Because, like, you know, we love the Miami Herald. We're going to be with the Miami Herald as long as they'll have us. But eventually, you might stop doing this podcast for the Miami Herald.
Right.
I just can't wait for down the road, the battle over the title of this podcast. Like, the Herald trying to keep, like, as if, like, we can't keep the name of this podcast because they would want it. I just like the idea.
They can't do that. They have no legal right to that. You know, I mean, it's
they're like, know, no, we want the Greg Cody Show with Greg Cody. That's ours. You can't have
right,
it.
Right. Hey, Graceland. I saw her. You're the Look at her out of popping me. Up. If I had a plastic mallet, I'd be hitting you on the head right now in that pop-up game. Hi, Graceland.
Greg Cody would hit children with a mallet.
Hi, T-ball player.
Hi.
How you doing? Are you enjoying T-ball?
Yes.
What do you like playing better, T-ball or soccer?
T-ball.
That's a good answer because that's what you're playing right now. Well, you're doing very well. We're going to come to your next game and bring a big throng of fans with us.
Wait.
How about that?
She doesn't know what a throng is, Greg.
It's a throng. It's a large crowd.
I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, let's keep it that way.
No. Right,
yes.
No.
Yes.
No.
Quit being obstinate.
No.
Okay. Continue being obstinate then.
No.
All right. Okay, give the headphones back to Daddy.
Okay.
And you know it.
Bye.
See ya.
Not saying and you know it.
She not saying and you know it. Oh, is that what you wanted her to say?
That's right. And you know it.
Come here. Come say it. She says it. It's
no.
Graceland, please.
You're afraid, that's why.
I said it to Pop yesterday.
No. Okay. I have a Comley update. This is exciting. The racehorse Comley that I own fractionally. I want to read a headline from Team Valor.
Like, if we're talking what percentage of the actual horse you own, do you think you own like a couple hairs on his tail?
Sure.
Like, what actual piece of Comley do you visualize?
Right. I own 1 square inch of the inside of the left nostril.
Mm.
That's how much I own of Comley. But it's an important part.
Thought you were going to go more sexual there.
Yeah, you know.
Thank you for not.
It's a family show. Anyway, this is a headline from Team Valor. Comley canters home on top by about 8 lengths.
She won. Yes.
Comley canters home on top by about 8 lengths in trial contest. Rainier, the trainer, plans to run 3-year-old filly back at Lyon, going 11 furlongs. Trainer calls schooling race a good experience for the UK import.
Let's go. Want to know.
And now,
we're like Jake Paul. We're like Jake Paul. We haven't really fought anybody yet. People are still saying, can we compete against actual racehorses? But
that's right.
Hey, want to know.
And by the way, Comley canters home. In horse racing, canters basically means, you know, somewhere between a trot and a gallop. Like, that's an easy run. That's not a horse exerting itself. At the end,
that's Tyreek Hill running against pants.
That's exactly right.
Holding up a peace sign as Comley was holding up a peace sign as she made the finish line.
That's it. Now, Comley's next competition in Lyon, France, is going to be a class one race. That's a major, not a major race, but class one is a top level race for 3-year-old fillies. So this is going to be a good test.
When is it?
I'm not sure exactly. It's later in March, but if she can win a class one race, that's major. You know, this is a horse continuing to show a lot of progress, a lot of potential.
How much money did you win for that?
This was not a stakes race.
Mm.
This was a training contest, that which is why I'm not overemphasizing the importance of an 8-length victory, but still impressive. You know, this is the kind of race where if she had finished in fourth place and just didn't look good, you would sag. You know, your hopes would really be deflated because horses pretty much need to finish in the top three consistently or else they don't become anything of any note. So
you're not sagging. So what are you this morning?
I'm ebullient.
Hmm.
I'm ebullient. I'm very happy for Comley.
What was your reaction when you got the Comley news?
Eight? lengths. I mean, that's a huge victory.
Like, does an owner give a fist pump? Like, was it like a...
No, but I was just, you know, Clark and I texted back and forth. We were excited. Clark had video of the race, actually. I saw Comley run, canter, and very impressive. I mean, you know.
Can you send me that? I want to watch Comley
run. Yeah, I will. But to see our silks, the red and green with the distinctive V, finishing first by a huge length, you know, your first thought is, well, it's only a training race. You know what? It's a bunch of horses with jockeys all trying to win. And so when you win by 8 lengths, that's damn impressive. So I will send you that video. I want to talk briefly about Novak Djokovic being denied an exemption and not being allowed to play in next week's Miami Open tennis tournament, because I got a lot of shit for that column on the Lebatard show. Dan and Mike were painting me like some far right zealot because I had dared write that I thought Djokovic should be allowed to play in the tournament. I am the least from a far right zealot as anybody I know, as last week when I mentioned Ron DeSantis's dystopian state for being anti drag show. So I just want to say I stand by what I wrote, man. I think Djokovic, you know, they're going to lift all of the restrictions in May. And the idea that they couldn't make an exception for him a month early is just, it's punitive to me. It's just, it's unnecessary. But it is what it is, as great men have said for at least the last 10 years.
Could there be any worse name for a college team than Fairleigh Dickinson?
Why?
I mean, it's just like the least intimate, like it's just.
Well, Greg, Fair Dick, man.
Like,
I mean, you
know. Fair Dick.
That's, I mean, their nickname. I just, like, I get it. It's just a university name. It's not like they're not creating these names to, like, be sports teams. But
Fairleigh Dickinson, you bring that up because they're the number 16 seed that beat number 1 Purdue in the first round. Only the second time that's ever happened, 16 beating 1.
In men's basketball.
Yeah, in men's basketball. It's happened in women's. Right. Last week on the Lebatard show, we had a sound clip ready to play of the Dickinson coach. He calls out Purdue. He's like, I want them to hear this. Purdue, we're coming for it.
Hey. I don't want Purdue to see this, right? The more I watch Purdue, the more I think we can beat them.
Yes, sir.
Let's go shock the world. Let's go do it.
We were going to play that sound to mock him on, like, the game of, like, can you believe this 16 seed call, like, being that aggressive towards Purdue? Right. And then they end up winning. Good thing we didn't get to that sound because we would have looked like idiots.
Yeah, he dared his players to shock the world, quote unquote, which what else are you going to say, right, if you're the coach of the 16 seed?
It'd be weird if a 16 seed coach was like, we're
f***ed. Right. Let's try to lose by less than 40 points.
Yeah.
That's the pregame.
Let's be honest, guys. We got no shot today.
Right. Now, the people who are infatuated with March Madness, and I'm sort of a March Madness agnostic.
March MAGA. I mean, that's going back
no,
to last
no, topic. Don't go there. No, please. No, no. March Madness, please. Okay. You know, I casually follow it. I'm not insane. I don't fill out a bracket. I'm not in an office pool. But the people who love March Madness are exulting because in the first 2 days of this tournament, 16 beats a 1, 15 Princeton beats 2 Arizona. A number 4 seed loses, a number 6 loses, and everybody loves these upsets. But my point is, calm down. Cream rises, okay? You see this every year. You get the big first-round upset, and those teams take a crap. That's why in the history of the men's Final Four, only 11s, nothing lower than an 11 has ever reached the Final Four, and no seed lower than an 8, Villanova in 1985, has ever won at all. So the Cinderella fallacy is that this just never happens. You never get the 16 going all the way.
I get your point. I think Stu Gatz has had this take before about how people love all these upsets, but in the end, it makes the tournament worse. It's like, yes, I want to see an upset, but I also want to see, like, good teams at the end. So it's right. I'm with you. I like the first round upset, but get the hell out of here, Dickinson. Lose right. to FAU in the second round, even though this game is, you know, already taken place. We're talking about this on Saturday, so we've only seen the first round game. So for all we know, Dickinson's already eliminated, and if they are, it's at the hands of FAU. We have either FAU or Dickinson making the Sweet 16 in this tournament, though.
The Owls. Go Owls. Foul owl on the prowl.
That's pretty cool. They've only made the tournament twice since 2002. This is only their second tournament appearance since 2002. And they have a chance, if they beat a 16 seed, to make... I know it's already happened, so I hate talking about this stuff when, like... So either right. They're in it or they're out.
Okay, but here again, we don't know the result of that, but... Here's Fairleigh Dickinson on top of the basketball world after that shocking upset in the first round. They were a 12-point underdog to FAU. Now, I don't know how that turned out, but that's indicative of the back-down-to-earth syndrome, you know?
Yeah.
And the Cinderella just never wins. That's the reality. And even if you consider a number 8 seed a Cinderella, the glass slipper has been worn in men's NCAAs once in history and not for almost 40 years. So, you know, I'm not throwing a wet blanket. I think it's great, but you know, I'm not necessarily as enthralled with the NCAA as other people. On that sour note, we're wrapping it up because Christopher's waving his index finger like a helicopter, and
we're around like a helicopter, North Carolina. You still love that song, man.
I have no idea what that song is.
In terms of like songs that just had a moment when I was like in high school or a little after high school of just like, God, did I love this song? Petey Pablo's North Carolina might be in the top 10 of just songs that had a moment in my life.
Yeah, it's funny. I had never heard it until I moved to Seattle, and people, I'd say I was from North Carolina, and they all would just yell that at me. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. Hit me with the white guy's sounder.
I love they did spinoffs from like every city.
Oh,
Miami, come on and raise up, take your shirt off. Like
hit the same, does it?
No, North Carolina.
Never.
Yeah. Whatever happened to Petey Pablo?
I don't know.
Or was it Pablo Petey?
It was Petey Puddles.
Okay, on that note.
We should try to get Petey Pablo on.
We really should. Not. No, go ahead.
I'm going for it now.
No, yeah. I am. I'm serious. I would love to hear him do the song live and change the lyrics to the Greg Cody Show.
The Greg Cody Show audience, take your shirt off. Go right around your head. I mean, like a helicopter.
Hey, that kind of thing. And work in a, and you know it, somewhere as well. Audience, podcast family, thanks as always for joining us. Really appreciate you. I have no idea what we talked about in this episode, but I enjoy those the most. And let's keep it that way. We'll see you all next week. That kind of thing.
Dad, you mentioned earlier this week a great idea for our merch website that was about 3 weeks too late, though, because we're already through March, basically. But you came up with the term merch madness.
Yes, correct.
So I think we should get people just that phrase. Go check out our merch store, thegregcodyshow.com.
Shop.thegregcodyshow.com.
Shop.thegregcodyshow.com. Check out all our stuff. We're going to be adding some more stuff in the coming weeks, but
yep, new designs coming.
Support us. Just support. I know we asked you for a lot, but it helps us. It pays the bills around here. It keeps Yeti and I, you know, on this podcast with my dad. So support us.
That's right.
If you don't buy stuff from shop.thegregcodyshow.com or support our sponsors, then it's just going to be Greg reading alone in his closet again.
It is. That's correct. This is almost like a hostage situation. You have to buy a t-shirt in order to keep Yeti and Christopher on the air.
This is the longest rap in history.
Keep Greg out of the closet.
There you go. On that note, see you next week.